It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And it's my great pleasure to welcome here in the studio, Terry Snyder. And on the phone are two people, Zaz Hollander calling in from where, Zaz?
The greater Palmer Fishhook area today.
Wonderful. And Philip Manning from up in Talkeetna and KTNA. Welcome, Philip.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So I'm going to start with crime. And we may end with crime, because crime has been a big deal. I'm going to reference, because I'm curious about Philip's perspective, I'm going to reference an article that appeared in the Anchorage Daily News that reads, Anchorage tops the nation in snow machine thefts. Does Talkeetna feel left out of this, or are there thefts of snow machine up there?
I haven't heard of a ton of snow machine thefts recently. I know down in the Caswell area there had been a lot of ATV thefts earlier, well, I guess last year at this point. And there have been a number of vehicle break-ins, but I haven't heard much specifically about snow machines.
Okay. Zaz, any information about snow machine thefts in your world?
Yeah, I mean, I think similar to Philip, there's certainly pockets of thievery down here in the slightly more remote core area. You know, on the way to Hatcher Pass, there are a lot of snow machines here. I don't hear a ton about snow machine theft per se. I would think that Anchorage number is just a per capita deal. Mm-hmm. It's just more people with snow machines per capita in Anchorage than most other cities.
The reason I bring this up is because I've spent far too much time watching Gavel to Gavel. And in the process, I've noted the beginning of the discussion about what to do about SB 91, SB 54, and criminal justice reform in general. And the reason why I bring it up is because as I read through the article about snow machine thefts, I realized that there was a question of accuracy in the sense of, did the statistics that were available, reported thefts, et cetera, reflect reality or not? And one of the things that I took away from presentations by the state and to Senate committees was that it's very difficult, for example, to come up with statistics that reference what is happening at the present time or even the last year. What one takeaway was that the statistics for crime in Alaska for 2018 will be available in August, well after the legislature mm-hmm. presumably finishes its activities. And so,
well, not every year.
Yeah. And then for you, Philip, the senator who covers your area at the Alaska legislature, Senator Mike Schauer, happens to be chairman of the State Affairs Committee. And he's been quoted recently as saying that there is, whether correct or not, I think that's an accurate representation, there is a lot of strong emotion associated with making SB 91 go away. And so I'm coming up and I'm saying we're about to launch into another potential revision of very significant legislation. But we pretty much don't have, it appears, the data to back that up. Have you had a chance to talk with Senator Schauer at all, Philip?
I have not since the start of the session, but I think his statement is very true, that there is definitely a lot of emotion tied up in SB 91 in particular in a lot of ways, but also in crime in general, because it's, you know, throughout the entire campaign season, pretty much every candidate, if you ask them what their focuses were, you would hear, you know, some combination of crime and the budget, and often the PFD thrown in there as well. So, and I think that's resonating with a lot of voters, because you're hearing a lot of things on social media, and I think there's a good question about whether or not people are reporting things, you know, because I'll see things on Facebook groups or hear them through word of mouth that never show up on the trooper dispatch. And I don't know mm-hmm. if that's that they're not being reported to the troopers, or if not everything is making the cut, as it were, to get onto the dispatch report.
I would like to bring up two references. One is NIBRS. This is an FBI-sponsored change to produce a more robust reporting system. Significantly more robust in the sense that there are data elements probably two times or more that would be recorded by officers who are taking the time to look through an incident and give information that would feed into a statistical system. There are also aspects of the present system that are interesting in that they are voluntary, although the sense we have is that a voluntary system of reporting, when it's tied to, in some cases, funding, is not just voluntary. I'm also wary about statements that are suggesting that SB 91 has not had an impact upon crime in the time that it's been in existence. Remembering it came into being in 2016. There were some revisions in 2017. And we still lack information from data about 2018. I'm understanding that in August we'll be able to look at that. So what we have is a situation, bottom line perhaps, that we don't have enough information to tease out what is a suggestion that SB 91 has not worked. We have other factors, and we have just the beginnings of an understanding of what seems to be working. We do have an emotional reaction to this, and I guess I'm curious what others have to say with comments. Terry?
Well, I think there's been a lot of misinformation on SB 91. I guess I question whether people have more information, if it's going to make a difference. I think people have chosen kind of to believe what they want to believe. I would hope that there's people that would look at the data if they're able to get more data and speak in less generalities, that they would move them. But it's really hard to move off of those political bumper stickers that have gotten people elected. And I think that's what you're seeing a little bit, is that you know, the people were sort of divided at the end of the election whether they wanted to fix SB 91 or wanted to retract it. But I just don't know if you still have people pushing fear of their community as really kind of the factor, if any of that new information will make a difference. I'll punt that back over to people that actually report on it for a living, like Zaz.
Yeah, the numbers are showing it. The study was just released pretty recently, I think, that does show a reduced recidivism rate, I think 65 to 61%, so a 4% drop. You know, how accurate that is, I don't know, and it stands to reason that if you're not imprisoning, you know, a certain number of mm-hmm. people under certain charges, you know, misdemeanor theft charges, et cetera, then you will have fewer people going back to jail. But there are also statistics showing that crime started rising 3 years before SB 91 was in place. So it's a causation correlation problem.
Yeah, and haven't they also tried to, there is being some correlation between the opiate problem and
sure.
that trend too. So I think it all gets pretty complex, kind of have to drill down on.
And budget cuts to mm-hmm. public defenders. And
a recession, and a recession.
Meanwhile, in Juneau, the governor has vowed a war on criminals. And in a recent article in the ADN, James Brooks describes what is likely to cost the state at least $43 million in additional spending if the various bills that are being offered by the governor to repeal portions of SB 91 are actually implemented. Senator Mike Schauer, of course, from it covers the Talkeetna area, suggested that whether correct or not, it appears that SB 91 needs to go away, the suggestion being that the implication for most people is that it has not worked. $43 million is the amount associated with this that would increase the availability of prison space and all of the people necessary to handle a war on crime. Philip, looking at Talkeetna over the past year, what would you say has happened there? Has there been an increase in crime?
You know, it certainly appears that way to talk to people, and I don't know how much of that is a question of perception. I'm definitely hearing a lot more about thefts and break-ins. There's definitely been an increase in that as far as I can see. Cabins being broken into, that sort of stuff is clearly happening. And, you know, I think Zaz brought up a good point as far as the impact of SB 91. SB 91 is an easy thing to point at mm-hmm. and say, this is the problem. But how much of that is post hoc ergo propter hoc? And, yeah, we've had increasing crime going up for a few years now.
And you don't have a trooper's post up there anymore.
That's correct,
yeah.
Which is another thing that I think a lot of locals are definitely interested in, is getting more of a trooper presence. And I know the boroughs passed that on as well. Whether or not that'll come to fruition remains to be seen, of course.
Zaz, you have been covering fires, and there is a criminal aspect to them. Is that not true?
Well, it's more than a suggestion. In two fires in Anchorage, and there was a spate of emergency calls up here in Mat-Su a few days ago. There were two fires, as far as I know, unrelated fires in two separate commercial buildings in Wasilla within about an hour of each other. And so all of a sudden, you know, every fire station in the borough was on standby in case there was another fire or some kind of an incident, just to make sure there were enough people and apparatus around to respond. But in Anchorage, there have been really not a substantially more than average number of commercial fires. Just a couple of them have been very high profile, including, you know, a $20 million damage to an unbuilt courtyard by Marriott Hotel that has been determined to be arson caused by investigators. And they aren't giving out much information as to the cause and origin of that fire, or the super weird fires this week in a strip mall off Tudor Road in Anchorage that destroyed a sushi restaurant, and then also a noodle business two doors down was damaged, not destroyed. And so the first fire has not only been determined to be arson, but it features a video clip. It's not funny to the restaurant owners, patrons, of two men leaving the building, one with his glove on fire in kind of a slapstick move, trying to get out a back gate. And so obviously police are looking for those two guys in connection to that fire. And someone just saw somebody break a window and start a fire in the other business. I don't know if that person is one of the two people who were wanted in connection to the Yakitori Sushi House fire. So there's a little more information available on that one. And so, of course, you know, given the relative lack of information about the cause, with these fires, there was a fire that at Sea, the Sea Galley building. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody is jumping on the fire bug. There's one person doing all these fires bandwagon, and that's not the case. There's really no, several of the fires that have happened are not considered to be suspicious. The Sea Galley fire is not considered to be arson. So people do like to draw connections between fires, and there aren't substantially more commercial fires, at least in Anchorage, than there are in January. It's a wintertime thing.
Yeah, I think I'm going to reveal my age a little here, but I remember, I don't know if you're old enough, but certainly remember the Pines Club on the corner of Tudor, probably burning down a couple of times over the many years, or mostly around the 80s, it seemed like, and I don't know that that was... Seems like at least one of those were arson. Were the ones in Mat-Su ever determined to be anything other than just benign fires of coincidence yet, Zaz?
I haven't heard back from the fire investigator for mm-hmm. Central Mat-Su.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Philip, fires in Tokina?
Fortunately, not many of them recently. There was a couple of months ago, we did have a home that burned down completely, mm-hmm. But that one it was incidental as far as I'm aware. But other than that, thankfully, not a lot of news on that front.
Let's turn to the school board. Terry, there's a new school board member. How about you talking a little bit about that?
Right, District 6. A couple of years ago, just from some background, there was a voter initiative to break the school board members, instead of being all at large, into districts. And District 6 had someone vacate early. She moved out of state, and so they went through their normal procedure. I think I've been through this with them three or four times. And they actually had five candidates originally, I think, which is kind of a lot, it seems like, for an appointed position, kind of looking at the past. But they interviewed four, walked away with a man who seems qualified, has little kiddos of his own in school, I think four or five, and ex-military and attorney. Mr. Michelson actually knew him from working on some boards with him, and he seems raring to go, and he took the sat up there and was sworn in and ended up being part of the school board for the rest of it. So they're in whole now from that area, which is always good to have representation.
Let's turn to the assembly meeting this past Tuesday. There was an interesting reveal, a report from the assessor about assessments in the borough, which have, it looks like in general, gone up. I'm curious, Terry, whether you noticed anything in the way of feedback, questions about the assessments, etc.
Well, it was a good presentation, and it is online at the borough website. We're growing. We're one of the only areas in Alaska that is growing. Unfortunately, it's a lot of residential, although there was a fair amount of commercial growth, too. And it is kind of a revealing in a matter of when the rest of the state has been in a recession to have that forward-leaning growth. Some of it in healthcare, other different areas is kind of a positive thing for the borough. Assessments, you know, is the explanation was given. There's their tools are getting better. They're getting a little more mapping. They've also looking at basements and the way that they calculate square footage of basements. There was some discussion on that, but I don't think there was any particular pushback from the assembly that. That determination of property value is kind of the money that goes into their budget. So they're all kind of anxious to get that number. And I think they gave a really pretty comprehensive view of what's going on in the borough. I think one important thing that came out of that is no one's quite sure what the total earthquake assessment is. And they know that a number of people, I don't know how many is from each area, has been filed for damaging. And a lot of those assessments were done prior to the damages. And so they are really putting a push out to get people that have had subject to damages in their property to make sure that they reach out and appeal their property assessments so that can be taken into consideration. Because there is a window by ordinance, not because they're mean people at the borough, but by borough ordinance that there is an appeal process that has to be considered. And so that I think they're busy trying to get that word out there. Others might have more to add on that.
Philip, have you had any indications from people with property in the Talkeetna area that their assessments are too high, just right, or maybe too low?
I think you get some of that every time a new round of assessments comes out. We went through, I can't remember if it was last year or 17, but in the last couple of years they did, I guess it was a couple of years ago, they redid a lot of downtown Talkeetna because there were a couple of businesses that were sold, which kind of adjusted the way that the borough was looking at the property value of land itself. That might have even been 3 years ago at this point. And so a lot of the assessments in downtown jumped way up, and even some of the ones further out down the spur road, you know, 7-8 miles from downtown, they saw an increase in the value of the property itself of, I want to say, between 25 and 40% in a lot of those cases. And in downtown, a lot of the lot values assessment doubled. So, yeah, there was kind of a sticker shock for a lot of folks a couple of years ago when that happened.
Let us turn to another topic that seems at first to be somewhere down the road, and that has to do with purging of voter rolls. We know that nationwide there's been considerable discussion about voter roll purging as a political process that tends to favor one group or another. But here in the state of Alaska, apparently on an annual basis, there have been roll purges that have occurred. The director of the Division of Elections has said that this is a common thing. It's been mandated by both federal and state law. And yet there's been some pushback. There have been people who have thought perhaps this is part of a conspiracy to somehow advantage one party or another. The bottom line about this is that because we had last year during voting a little bit of a kerfluffle around the issue of people approaching a poll place and finding themselves, subjected to some scrutiny because there had been maybe less attention paid on their part to confirming that they were still on the roll because their address had changed a bit. This is something that it seems to be ignored, your actual voter registration, until the day that you walk in and say, I'm here to vote, and people say, well, you're not on the rolls. I'm curious if any of you have had experience with people who have looked at this present proposed purge that's ongoing, particularly since there seem to be, at the present time, more people on the rolls than there are people that are eligible to vote.
I haven't heard from anybody.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing, though, that now with the automatic opt-in with the PFD, it seems like it'd be pretty easy for them to take the PFD current information and overlay it over the voters and figure out residency pretty quick. But maybe that's a leap too far.
Philip, any comment?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything either. I think it might be a case of, yeah, once somebody, you know, goes in on election day or, you know, that sort of thing, which is why I think it's important to get the word out whenever registration deadlines are coming up to have people double check. The PFD registration changes things a little bit, but yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, out of sight, out of mind for, you know, except for one day every other year.
Right. So this is the reason we've highlighted this issue at the present time. If you're out there in particular, if you're a person who's moved a lot, you're not sure whether you have remained on the rolls, you would like to look forward to voting, then by all means, you can go to the Division of Elections and check. And you can check for yourself and check for your relatives and make sure that everything is working correctly. The other topic that is of some interest is the PFD check. We're not quite sure what the dollar amount will be, but it is obvious that many people have already signed up for their PFD check. They have published the numbers on a regular basis on the PFD.Alaska page, and we're well over 250,000 individuals here in the state of Alaska who have filed for their PFD. In addition, we've just received at the first part of February notification about the numbers associated with the dollars that have been contributed to Pick, Click, and Give organizations. And at the present time, we seem to have a larger amount than at this time last year. So that's a little bit of good news as well. Philip, are there any other topics in Talkeetna that are rising to the fore?
Well, you know, it hit a little bit on the assembly, and one thing that came up in that meeting was approval of a loan from the Clean Water Fund, the state's Clean Water Fund, to do some work on the sewer lagoon. The plan is to remove 780 tons of sludge and related material from the lagoon once things thaw out. So wow. That did get approved to the tune of about $1.6 million. So we'll see what impact that has going forward.
Where does that sludge go?
What they do is they remove it, lay it out, and dry it, and then it gets trucked somewhere. I don't know if what the rules are, if it can be used for fertilizer anywhere or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think there's been some discussion in the assembly about that. That's I don't think they can put it into the soils, but I think that's a really
it doesn't go into the river.
Yeah. We'll need to have the answer to that.
I certainly hope not.
Okay. Well, with that, I want to thank our three panelists for today. Terry Snyder for coming all the way into the studio. Thank you very much, Terry. Also, Zaz Hollander for calling in from the greater Palmer area. Thank you, Zaz. And, of course, thank you to Philip Manning for calling in from KTNA up in Talkeetna. We'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.